So I want to read a little bit from, so I can't stand reading on online, so I tend to print things out. Forgive me, trees. But from, this is from Ajahn Sumedho's book. Metta means not being caught up in the thoughts we have, the attitudes, the problems, the feelings of the mind. So it becomes an immediate practice of being very mindful. To be mindful means to have metta towards the fear in your mind, or the anger in your mind, the jealousy in your mind. Metta means not creating problems around existing condition, rather allowing them to fade away, to cease, so that deeper invitation of things are the way they are. They cannot be otherwise. This is part of the teachings of equanimity. Can we sit down in the middleness of all that is happening, or the 10,000 foot view, or seeing the world through grandmother's eyes, right? Things are the way they are. There's an equanimous place. It doesn't mean we like them, and it doesn't mean we don't take steps from a responsive place to make things better, but it allows us to pull or step out from under what can be the tyranny of reactivity, or a place of conditioning. But where are we able to locate, where are we able to anchor ourselves? And in the teachings here, it's like, well, in mindfulness and awareness, but also in a sense of friendliness towards ourselves. Again, a gentling into, oh, in this moment, I am like this, scattered, irritated, distracted, happy. The world is a mess and beautiful and many other things. Okay. And we breathe. Okay, things are the way they are. Okay. Then how do we want to respond? One of my, this is sort of feels like favorite hit day today, but this book, In Love with the World, by Yorge Mingal Rinpoche. I love this book. He is a self-described from a family royalty in Dharma. If anyone is familiar with Sukhni Rinpoche, they are siblings. And he was an abbot of a very well-established monastery in Kathmandu. I think in Kathmandu, definitely in Nepal. And he had dreams of doing a wandering retreat for 3 years. And one in the middle of the night, he made some arrangements. He didn't tell anybody. And he slipped away out of the monastery at 1 a.m. in the morning or something, and had called a cab, but the cab didn't come. But he got himself to the train station and took a train to India. So he was going to do a pilgrimage of sorts through the Buddhist footprints. And he writes about being on the train, and he just was in the cheapest place possible on the train. And this is a man who grew up basically in robes in this very well-revered monastic family. And he writes about his experience being on the train. My eyes were not in neutral gear. They were not just seeing. They were not just resting on objects. Instead, figures around me were becoming alien creatures, others, those over there. Their dirty clothes obscured my heart. I was faulting their cracked, bare feet, yet soon my own would look just as filthy. Their body odor was repellent, even though the humidity and the heat and the absence of air conditioning must have left my own body smelling just as bad. And he goes on to write about how much trouble he had sitting with these people that they were like all on top of him and bumping into him. And he was just like, oh my God, this is horrible. And the next thought being, I've been practicing since I was first born. How could I be so caught up in aversion to these situations? And it's the humility and the beauty with which he writes about his reckoning with, this is a reactivity to like, ooh, this is gross. How do we have, and he writes again so beautifully about settling into, okay, watching the reactivity of the mind, not necessarily believing it, but making space for, oh, there's all these reactions to the immediacy of these people that he was so unfamiliar with being around. The first response is aversion. And some of us, as we're going into supermarkets now with people that don't have masks or bumping into people, there may be some of that too, of ooh, of like back, what are you doing in my space? The circles are still there, for at least here in California, for the social distancing. And some people are honoring that, some people aren't. But I think in California, we're opened, so there is no more of that. But there can be a body's response because we have been conditioned for about 16 months to keep our distance from people. So how are we responding? Is there a greater sense of aversion that's coming up? Okay. Just noticing and allowing there to be this aversion without having a reaction to it. So much of this, what this practice can really support us in, being able to not be at the whim of our reactivity, but rather being able to anchor ourselves and say, oh, right, this is aversion. Okay, again, it can feel pleasant, unpleasant, neutral. That's the second foundation of the feeling tone, the Vedanas. I might not like it, but that doesn't mean I have to fight against it. So this invitation to put down the fight against either the aversion that's coming up within ourselves, and you know, many of us have been living 24/7 with people that we might not ever have signed on to live 24/7 with, however much we might love them. Okay. So aversion comes up, frustration comes up. Right. Because we're human. This is from, actually, I need to go with. There might be a little bit more in here from Sumedha's book. Bear with me. Sorry. Metta is not conditioning yourself to believe that you like something that you don't like at all. It's just not dwelling in aversion. It's easy to have metta towards some things: pretty kids, good-looking people, pleasant-mannered people, little puppies, beautiful flowers. We can feel metta for ourselves when we're feeling good. I feel happy with myself right now. When things are not going well, it's easy to feel kind. When things are going well, it's easy to find kindness towards that which is good and pretty and beautiful. And at this point, we can get lost. Metta is not just good wishes and lovely sentiments and high-minded thoughts. It's always very practical. This idea of, if I'm a good Buddhist, I should like everybody. And all that comes from an impractical idealism. Have metta for the aversion you feel, for the pettiness of the mind, the jealousy, the envy, meaning peacefully coexisting, not creating problems, not making it difficult, nor creating problems out of the difficulties that arise in life and within our bodies and minds. So this beautiful invitation to, honey, settle down. Of course, aversion is going to come in. We are going to have aversion to things out there and to things in here. Okay. What's next? Can we allow ourselves to step out from under, I shouldn't feel this way, I should feel this way, blah, 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 blah. It's not that useful. It's a lot of energy that can kind of spin us up here, and the mind can spin around, when really it's just, honey, this is aversion. This is irritation. This is rage. Feel it in the body. Breathe and make space for it such that it can keep moving through. From the Paramis book. And actually, you can't get this book. Sorry. This too is an ebook. We were blessed enough at Spirit Rock to get hard copies of it, but if you go online, it becomes an ebook. This is similar to Ajahn Sumedha. Let's get to the crunch point. A heart brimming with love is indeed an attractive ideal, but what's more important, it's the breadth of application rather than the intensity of affection. As an analogy, the Buddha remarked that if bandits caught you and sawed your limbs off, if at any point during that process your mind moved into aversion, then you haven't been practicing metta enough. So there's a standard. So if you include all beings all the time, you'll recognize that to not allow the mind to move into hatred and ill will is the pass mark you have to aim for. And indeed, as he writes, that's a very high mark. Metta is an extension of the effective and responsive mind or heart. What a crucial alignment this is. On the one hand, the mind can get trapped by fear and greed, hatred, delusion. And on the other hand, the mind can extend in generosity and other perfections. And this is key. The main issue for the mind is how it relates to what happens, right? Like the monk on the train. Oh my God, all this humanity watching the aversion, making space for it. Relationship is fundamental because we are actually never a standalone being. We are always being with, being in, or even a being with a sense of being without. Consciousness is just this awareness of being with in the various fields of seeing and hearing and tasting and smelling and touching and thinking. These six sense doors that the Buddhists teach about being in relationship with what we see, what we hear, what we taste, and so on. And here, this is in the practice of kindness, we look into the mind as it is happening, one moment at a time, with the intention to gentle it out of its hold of aversion, depression, and anxiety. And I just love that phrase. I use it all the time, as I have today. This notion of gentling ourselves into a moment, gentling ourselves perhaps out of the aversion. And where we get caught sometimes with the aversion is the second arrow of I shouldn't feel this way, or I'm mad at myself for feeling this way, or this is so unpleasant to feel this way. And on, when really it's like, I feel this way. Breathing and allowing ourselves to be with whatever is with us presently, you know, whatever the experience is, pleasant, unpleasant, sight, what we see, what we taste, what we touch. Can we allow ourselves to be with things just as they are? A poem from Marie Howe, The Gate. I had no idea that the gate I would step through to finally enter this world would be the space my brother's body made. He was a little taller than me, a young man, but grown himself by then, done at 28, having folded every sheet, rinsed every glass he would ever rinse under the cold and running water. "This is what you've been waiting for," he used to say to me. And I'd say, "What?" And he'd say, "This," holding up my cheese and mustard sandwich. And I'd say, "What?" And he'd say, "This," sort of looking around. This idea of, yes, this. This moment, wow, as we're sitting here in the mundane Jack's book, the ecstasy and then the laundry. It's one of those titles. This mundaneness of our life, of we're home and we've seen the same walls for a long time. Yeah. This moment that is beautiful, this moment that is less than beautiful, this moment that's super irritating. Yes, this. From Rumi. Today, like every other day, today, like every other day, we wake up empty and frightened. Don't open the door to the study and begin reading. Take down a musical instrument. Let the beauty of what we love be what we do. There are 100 ways to kneel and kiss the ground. Don't ask you to close your eyes. And just check in with the body, how these words are resonating or not, landing or not. Allowing yourself to gather your attention again in your own form, what you're sitting with, how the body is. In space for whatever opinions or thoughts there may be from what I've shared or what you've been thinking otherwise, and just locating yourself within yourself. And the question I have, and just keep your eyes closed if that feels comfortable, and just notice what comes up as I ask this question. What are the ways in which you love the world? And even to consider, what does that even mean? You know, to play. From Rumi, there are 100 ways in which to love the world. How do you do it? That's not what he said. He said there are 100 ways to kneel and kiss the ground. So I'm paraphrasing. Let's go with 100 different ways, probably endless ways, that we can love the world. How do we love the world? And just to allow the question to be open and sort of the image that comes to my mind is if we're around a field, whatever flowers may pop up, whatever ideas may pop up as illustrations of the ways in which you love the world. To allow also the heart, can we answer from the heart rather than the thinking mind? What is the way the heart expresses its love for the world in this world of the day to day, this Thursday morning, afternoon, evening, the end of a workday, the beginning of a workday? How does the heart show up to love the world? As an aspiration and as a reality. And if anyone's thinking it doesn't, okay, let that response go and stay with it. It can be a repeating question even. How does the heart, how does my heart love the world? In this day, in this moment. Can we look around? As the poet's brother says, this cheese and mustard sandwich, this is what you've been waiting for. Can we look around the landscape of our world, the people we see regularly, the work we may do, the things we touch with our hands? Can this be the world we are waiting for, that's waiting for us? I think it's Joseph Campbell who invites us to put down the life we think we should be living, the life we should be leading, and actually embody and live the world, the life we are actually living. What would it be like to release ourselves from the fantasy of the life we think we should have and say, yeah, sweetie, this is actually the life we're living. These are the people in my life. This is the work I do. This is where I call home, whether, and for many of us, it may not be the perfect place because that doesn't exist. Can we allow ourselves to inhabit our bodies that may be sick, our bodies that may be healthy, to embody our lives from the place of this is how it is. It cannot be otherwise. And in this moment, then, can I allow a sense of this, the rays of metta, the sunlight, the heat, the element of fire, of heat, to be a source for our capacity to love what's here, to free ourselves from the aversion that will come, to meet the world with a sense of friendliness and balance. As Sylvia Bornstein says, may I meet this moment as a friend, even if the moment sucks and it's full of despair and disappointment and all of those ways in which moments do show up for us that can sometimes feel like years and sometimes are years. Can we still have a sense of steadiness of heart that is warmed by the warmth of the sun rays of metta? And what would it be like, just to take a few more moments here to linger in that sense of perhaps sitting outside, feeling the sun's rays as a blessing of loving kindness towards ourselves, our own experiences, knowing that that same sun rays are touching all of us, from those of us in Calgary and Canada and Minnesota and Germany and the UK, the sun touches all of us. And to feel the blessing of the rays as a kiss of metta. Sweetie, drink it in. How would it be to move in the world from this place, enveloped by the warmth of these rays of metta? I'll stop here. And thank you so much for your kind attention. And would love to hear from you. For some people, it can be a little jarring to then speak into a group, let alone a Zoom group. So you're welcome to chat your comments. And either Juliana or I will read it. Or if you want to raise your hand in the participants button, Juliana will call on you. And would just love to hear from you. And again, whether it's something that is related to what I spoke of today, or if you have a practice question, we'd just love to hear from you. So thank you again.
Thank you for listening. To learn how you can support the teachers and Dharma Seed, please visit dharmaseed.org/donate.